From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm David Folkenflik, and this is On Point. The feeling that people on the lower end of the ladder are getting screwed is palpable. The super rich are getting super richer. And take the federal minimum wage. It stayed at the same level for the past decade. There seems to be some change afoot. There's been a call for greater accountability from leading political figures and also from a leading business group. Yet how much is actually changing? A slew of CEOs have been fired, but they've received staggering payouts on the way out. This hour, On Point, redefining corporate accountability and the bottom line. We'd love for you to join us. What do you think major American companies should place greatest importance on? Increased profits, a living wage, a safe workplace, a push for a carbon-free future? How do you measure success for companies? Who should they serve? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on the Twitters and Facebook at OnPoint Radio. With me here in studio in New York City is Peggy Foran. She's Chief Governance Officer and Corporate Secretary at Prudential Financial, a Fortune 500 company providing insurance, investment management, and a lot of other financial services. She's been a corporate governance leader throughout her career with earlier stops at companies including Sara Lee, Pfizer, and JP Morgan. Thanks so much for joining us, Peggy Foran.
Thanks, Dave.
And with us from Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, she's Nell Minow. She's vice chair of Value Edge Advisors, a firm focused on helping institutional investors engage effectively as shareholders of the companies they own. She will, over the course of this hour, explain what that actually means. She's also been a critic of how companies are run. Businessweek once called her the queen of good corporate governance. Nell Minow, welcome to On Point.
Thanks. Hi, David and Peggy.
Hey, Nell.
These two clearly know each other, and we're introducing them to you this hour as well. Nell Minow, set us up. Give us the state of play. You know, Price Waterhouse study found that there were 250 CEOs that turned over this year, which they described as a record high in their survey, and that for the first time, ethical breaches rather than concerns over profit drove the greatest number of those departures. What's in the water? What's happening right now?
Well, as you said, right now we've got a little bit of a crisis of credibility, as we do in so many different sectors of our society when it comes to CEOs. The astronomical pay, completely with no relationship to performance, has made people both within and without the corporation very skeptical. Corporate leaders announced confusingly toward the end of last year that they were going to now focus on social responsibility and on stakeholders. Nobody knows what that means, except that it means even less accountability, because accountability to everybody is accountability to nobody. Meanwhile, companies like Murray Cole, we discovered in their bankruptcy filing, because it had not previously been made available, that while they were going under, they were putting tons of money, of shareholder money, into climate change denial. Companies have also been fighting to cut back on even the slightest shareholder rights on advisory shareholder proposals with huge initiatives at the SEC and the Department of Labor. So companies are hoping to regain some credibility and going about it in all the wrong ways.
So we're going to take a breath. We're going to unpack that, Nell Minow, because you've covered a lot of terrain there. So Peggy Foran, you're somebody who, as I understand it, although correct me if I'm wrong, you're not the internal cop, but you're somebody saying you're the person who has to think about these issues, right, internally, and making sure that other people are conscious of what's called governance issues as they go about their jobs, corporations. Just even unpack the word governance. What does that mean for an ordinary listener? What does governance mean to a corporation?
Well, you know, governance can mean a lot of things to corporations, but Nell, I hear you, but I actually disagree. I really believe in the last 10 years that companies, and particularly boards, have really stepped up. You know, as Dave said, you know, last year, the firing or CEOs leaving had more to do really with ethics. And I think what you're seeing is boards are really taking their fiduciary responsibilities of overseeing the corporation. Are they perfect? No. But I think as, you know, if you compare this to 20 years ago, you're going to see that there's a lot more oversight. There's a lot more talk of fiduciary responsibilities. There's a lot more discussions. There's a lot more executive sessions. There's a lot more discussion among board members on what oversight is, what risk is, what culture is. So I think things have been more focused on, quote, governance, doing, you know, overseeing the corporation than I think you've ever seen in the past.
Bob Lamb is Peggy Foran is a lawyer and writer on issues of corporate governance.
And he reported to me at one of the companies I was at. Bob's a great guy.
All right. So he wrote that he kind of believed there was a rupture in the social compact that permits corporations to exist in the first place, possibly due to runaway executive compensation in the face of persistent income inequality. Fair?
I think certain pieces of that are fair. I think income inequality is a real issue. And there are things that I think all of us, whether or not you're a board member, whether you're an executive in a corporation, I think we all need to focus on that.
So what does that actually mean? Like the Business Roundtable came out, right? And it's this group that's created a statement on the purpose of a corporation. And it a lot of major companies are part of the Business Roundtable. I believe Prudential is.
No, we are not.
You're not a member of Business Roundtable. All right. So this was signed by 181 CEOs. The idea is that they're committing to lead their companies for the benefit of all of what they call stakeholders, that is customers, employees, suppliers, the communities in which those companies operate, and their shareholders, the people who actually have given them the capital to invest and keep money, keep operating, right? They commit to that, right? And they issue this statement, whatever. I think that that's a little bit of what Nell Minow was alluding to earlier, and I'll give her a chance to respond to you in a moment. But in the idea that if they're making businesses accountable to the entire universe, then there's no one controlling authority that gets to be a real check or break. When you say, yes, it's a concern, corporations have to think about persistent income inequality, what does that mean? What does that mean beyond good charitable efforts, which I'm, a lot of corporations, I'm sure Prudential do nice charitable work. What does it mean in terms of actually running the company?
Well, you know, I can only point – we are not a member of the Business Roundtable, but I can only tell you when the statement came out with the Business Roundtable, I think many executives and companies, and particularly I know my CEO, while he said it differently, it was the equivalent of DA, which is in order to be, you know, a long-term value to the corporation, you have to consider your stakeholders. And Prudential recently came out with a multi-stakeholder commitment, which again was not new. It was the first time we codified it. But in order to be successful, you've got to pay attention to your employees. You've got to pay attention to society. You've got to pay attention to your customers, or you're not going to be successful. And so I think that is, you know, I recognize that this whole issue on shareholder primacy has gotten a lot of airtime. But I think if you look at, and particularly perhaps larger companies, they've recognized that in order really to be successful, you've got to take into account all of those groups.
I want to play Nell Minow a clip from the CEO of BlackRock. It's the world's largest asset management firm and investment firm, nearly $7 trillion, trillion under its oversight. Its CEO, Larry Fink, has urged companies in which BlackRock invests directly to look beyond the bottom line and profits or to risk losing BlackRock's support. Here he spoke with CNBC in January 2018.
You need to be connected to your employees. You need to be connected with your clients, your communities, and you operate. And that's really what the essence of what I'm saying. But most importantly, I believe the companies that have purpose are the best companies in the world because it unites their employees. It connects the clients. But most importantly, it brings the organization onto a common plane. And I think that's very vital. And the best companies that I know of are the ones that work towards a purpose.
Nell Minow, you are an advisor essentially to institutional investors, and you basically help them figure out their priorities and convey those to companies and say, look, this matters to us and we have a big stake in you, so you got to listen at least to what we have to say. What in practice is what Larry Fink is Larry Fink conveying here? I mean, is this meaningful or is this just sort of a lovely aspiration?
That is a great question. And perhaps Larry Fink will have to think about it himself now that some of his shareholders have filed a shareholder resolution at his company telling him to practice what he preaches. Not only does BlackRock fail to support shareholder initiatives on issues like climate change, which lets clear are about investment risk, not about just being nice. It's a very serious financial concern. But their votes are inconsistent with their own stated policies. So I think one of the problems here is that there are often 17 layers, intermediaries between you, the holder of stock, and your 401k, and there are undisclosed fees at all of those. And so, you know, you probably hold stock that is being voted and is being handled in a way that you're not comfortable with, and nobody's telling you about it. I also want to say that I agree with Peggy. I've got a very Dickensian best of times, worst of times view on corporate governance right now. There have been a lot of improvements, and boards are much more effective, and I would like to take credit for a lot of that. That's exactly what I've been working on for 30 years. Believe me, they didn't come up with those ideas themselves.
I give you credit, Dale.
you're hearing this rare kind of, you know, a C-level executive and one of their top critics acknowledging that this has been a useful level of pressure. We only got a little bit of time left before the end of this first segment. But you're saying that pressure has been useful, actually, on corporations to think more clearly about their values.
Absolutely. And I think engagement, you know, by board members as well as management is absolutely critical. To get to hear this from a number of not only shareholders but stakeholders. So I think Neil has done fabulous work.
We're discussing how companies are run, what accountability looks like, what it should look like in boardrooms across the country. You can join our conversation. What questions do you have about how corporate boardrooms really function? What outrages do you want our guests to explain? What companies do you admire? Me, I'm David Folkenflik, and this is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm David Folkenflik. People usually get that politicians need to be held responsible, yet corporations require accountability too. They're supposed to be held to account by their corporate boards, their outside accountants, credit agencies, regulators, the press, but they often do as much as they can to evade such scrutiny. And without sunlight, crazy stuff can happen. This hour, we're exploring how the thinking of the fundamental mission of the corporation is shifting as scandals pile up at some of the companies, some of the country's most prominent companies. You can join our conversation. If you teach courses at business schools or you've retired from the corporate game, what are the most persuasive ideas you've heard to reform how corporations are run? To voters following the 2020 elections, do Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders' call for great regulation appeal to you? Or maybe are you drawn by the entrepreneurial spirit of someone like Andrew Yang? Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. With me here in studio in New York City, I'm delighted to say, is Peggy Foran. She's Chief Governance Officer and Corporate Secretary at Prudential Financial. And we have with us from Washington, D.C., Nell Minow. She's Vice Chair of Value Edge Advisors. It's a firm focused on helping institutional investors engage effectively as shareholders of the companies in which they have a stake. I want to start now by taking a couple of your calls. Let's go now to Miami, Florida. Love to hear from Greg. Greg, thanks for listening. What's your thoughts?
Thanks for having me. Mr. Folkenflik, you mentioned the C-level executive, a message from the C-suite. Well, this is a message from the C-level of Miami. My name is Greg, and I'm calling because at the top of your show, you were asking listeners to respond to what they thought was really most important. And I believe, and I know that I echo this on behalf of many, many working on climate policy in the USA and globally, is that the fact is, without a working planet, no other cause matters. And we have a lot of wonderful statements, whether it's the Fink letter from several years ago or the BRT statement from a few months ago. At the end of the day, and I hearken to an article in Green Biz, it's called The Big Whiff, How Corporate America Missed the Climate Fix. What we have is government affairs teams show up on Capitol Hill on behalf of companies, and they'll lobby on behalf of all kinds of policies that benefit the company or the industry. But when it comes to bold climate policies, such as pricing carbon, a lot of them are just not standing up. They'll be navel-gazing at the time. And if we don't get a price on carbon, we don't get companies to actually advocate, not just to make the statements. I mean, look, let's face it, ExxonMobil, BP, Shell, a lot of big oil companies and a lot of other companies publicly say that they support a price on carbon. But when it comes to lobbying for it, then that's where they fall short. And what we're talking about, what everybody's been talking about on the show, is the triple bottom line, balancing, let's simplify, people, planet, and profit, right? So we want to have financial performance along with social performance and environmental performance. But the person who coined the term over 25 years ago, John Elkington, recalled the term. There's something missing. And that's policy. I call it the fourth P, or the quad bottom line.
So, Greg, before I turn this over to Peggy Foran, a top executive at Prudential Financial, a top Fortune 500 company, Greg, do you work in this field yourself, or are you just a close reader in this?
I'm a very close reader, and I work in a training. I used to teach corporate sustainability and lead green building all around the country and sometimes
Fabulous.
Around the world.
Sound like a knowledgeable caller. We're always delighted to draw on their knowledge as well. Thank you for that call, Greg. Becky, friend, I saw you nodding during part of that call. Tell me, you know, what you've seen both in sort of the greater corporate scene, and then I'll ask you a little bit about Pru.
Well, I think it's interesting, and particularly probably in the last 5 years or so, really sustainability, environmental, climate, they're all becoming more and more important to corporations for all the reasons that we said before. And, you know, with respect to Prudential, just recently, I think it was probably about a month and a half ago, we came out with our environmental commitment. So I think what you're seeing, and I think you bring up a good point, it's not just discussing, it's just not talking about it. It's really putting on paper, you know, what you're committing to.
Peggy, back when I was a rookie reporter in Durham, North Carolina for the Herald Sun down there, Prudential was the folks who handled our modest little 401ks down there, right? It was delighted that they had the program and all, family-owned at that time. Does the kind of commitment you talk about extend to whether or not you run a green company, or does it also extend to the nature of the kind of investments that you you steer your clients toward, in, as they have larger retirement portfolios that they themselves are unlikely to, you know, understand all the variegations of?
Well, I think it's both, and I think that really depends on the company. But taking a look, for example, at the broader corporate commitments, you know, be it a financial services company, being a manufacturer, it's really coming out, listening to this, and really putting pen to pencil and saying, this is what we're going to commit to. And, you know, again, you talked about if corporations are committing, then they, you know, they really have to support those commitments.
Let's go to a call now from Fitchburg, Massachusetts. Joseph, thanks for listening. What does this conversation stir in you?
Well, I hate to contradict both of your speakers. They're very nice people. But as someone who travels around the U.S. and other parts of the world as a trainer and works with about 200 companies a year, I'm seeing a lot of talk. But my question is, where's the beef? And several recent articles in Wall Street Journal and other places have demonstrated over and over again that companies are talking about it, but they are not really committing to it. It simply is not happening. And when we see the advances that are actually taking place, about 98% of them are not as a result of deliberate action taken as a result of the company's decision. It's a scandal. It's something that gets investigated. It's something that they are pushed to as a result of it. And contrary to the talk, it simply is not happening. And one other aspect that I'd like to hear your guest thoughts on is, I think what we need is not just corporate social responsibility. We've got CSR all over the place, and it's essentially meaningless at this moment in time. But what we need is somebody on the board of governance for each corporation to help make them responsible to a national government. as long as multinationals report to no one but stockholders or even stakeholders, they have no obligation to be a good citizen in any country. And that's becoming a huge problem. When billions of dollars are at stake and you can be good as a company while being bad as a national citizen, we have a huge problem facing us right now and into the future. So I'm
Joseph, thank you for that. Let me toss that very briefly because I want to go to Nell about elements of this. But Peggy Foran, you know, you help – you're corporate secretary. That means you help determine the rules that this corporation runs by, right? Like you are a lawyer. You are, you've been at the top levels of major companies for years. Somebody says, hey, you know what? We just want one seat on Prue, on Sara Lee for a federal regulator or a top administration official, just so that, you know, we can be sure you guys are good national citizens. Is that a non-starter, or would people be open to that in the current climate?
Well, I can't really answer that. What I can answer is the skills and experiences that corporations are now looking at for board members. I think it's absolutely critical that you have directors that have the types of backgrounds that we're talking about, have the diversity and have the opportunity and the ability to really oversee and monitor these types of issues. So, for example, at Prudential, years ago, sustainability and environmental issues were delegated to a committee of the board because the board recognized and management recognized how important those issues were. And in order to really oversee, you need at least a director, if not more than directors, that really have the skills so that they know what the issues are and they know how to monitor and oversee those issues. So before we start really talking about having a regulator on the board, I think you really have to focus on having the skills and experience in the board so that you can monitor and oversee, as well as educational opportunities for board members for them to recognize really the risk as well as the opportunities that these issues bring to a corporation.
Let's go to one of several case studies, and I'm not asking you guys to be perfect on the details of this, but more in thinking broad picture about what we saw in governance, what may have worked, what may not have worked. Now, Minow, I want to play a couple clips. Last month, David Calhoun was named Boeing's next chief executive. He succeeds Dennis Muilenburg, who was fired after two deadly crashes exposed serious flaws in Boeing's 737 MAX jet. Just weeks earlier, Calhoun spoke with CNBC expressing unwavering support for Muilenburg to remain as CEO.
He has led a program to rewrite MCAS to alleviate all of those conditions that ultimately beset two unfortunate crews and the families and victims. And he's done that incredibly well. He manages it every single day. He keeps the board abreast of everything that happens every day. And he's done that well. And he has set us up for a return to service.
A return to service meaning getting those birds back in the air for Boeing. MCAS refers, just so folks know, to the flight control software that Boeing uses in that aircraft. And it's worth noting that Calhoun himself had previously served in top executive leadership positions at companies including General Electric and Blackstone. Now, Muilenburg himself was clearly determined to stay on leading the company, as he expressed at a conference held by the New York Times Dealbook folks back in November.
I've thought about it, but to be frank, that's not what's in my character. I don't see running away from a challenge, resigning, as the right solution.
Now, Nell Minow, you know, it seems to me at times it's easy to make the person of the CEO the face of a scandal, the face of a problem, the face of a crisis, and to try to exact something from that person. At the same time, if CEOs are not accountable, if chief executives are not accountable for what happens below them, I'm not sure what accountability means at major companies. How do we explain the time it took for Boeing to reach the decision it did that it would do better in the future without Muilenburg as its CEO than with him?
All of the improvements that Peggy mentioned about governance and boards have been completely lost on Boeing, which has had a concept of governance back from the 1990s. Many of its directors are on too many boards. It has celebrity directors like Nikki Haley and Caroline Kennedy, not a single pilot on the board. Huge move from sort of a manufacturing mindset to a financialization mindset, moving the numbers around rather than focusing on quality and safety. There's no accountability if you fire somebody and he goes with a multi-million dollar package. This is the definition of termination for cause. The board of Boeing didn't even talk about the safety issue until after the second crash. So as far as I'm concerned, the entire board should be replaced. I just want to go back to a previous point. The idea of having a regulator on the board would be catastrophic. It would be a massive conflict of interest. Essentially, regulators are in the boardroom. That's what regulations are all about. The problem is that in the United States, since 1789, corporate governance has been left to the states, and the states compete to see who can be the most protective of the CEOs. If I could make one change, if I could tell Elizabeth Warren what should be in her proposed bill, I would say let the shareholders pick the state of incorporation. Then we would have a race to the bottom instead of what former SEC Chairman William Carey called the race to the bottom. We would have a race to the top. Shareholders could pick the state of incorporation. And I also want to point out that millennials are more committed as investors and as consumers to looking at environmental concerns, what we call ESG, environmental social governance concerns. It's the fastest growing area of investment. Everybody is getting involved in it. Nobody knows 100% what it means. It's still very evolving. But I think we're going to see a huge market shift toward environmental sensitivity and investing, and that's very much risk-based.
You know, I want to pick up on a couple of things you're talking about there, Nell Minow. It strikes me two things. One is, you know, the New York Times did this huge enterprise piece about some of the questions of safety at major plants run by Boeing in South Carolina that were putting together these airplanes. And there was a quote there that stopped me cold, where I believe it was a woman who was one of the product safety officers there told the Times, although not by name, that she would not put one of her own kids on the airplanes. Now, if that were me and I as CEO, you know, I've never been in such a position, I guess outside my college daily, but I wouldn't, you know, that would set my hair on fire. Like, I wouldn't stop. It seemed to me as though Boeing was more interested in sort of controlling the continued flow of aircraft out to clients than it was in grappling with that. And the other
thing
is—
Which is the very definition of a short-term versus long-term perspective. That's not a sustainable business model. And that's what I meant by the financialization. That's looking at the quarterly returns rather than overall viability of the company.
And there was this other element you mentioned about the multi-million dollar package. Multi-million dollars sounds like guy gets several million dollars. Occasionally a woman, usually these days it seems like it's the guys who exit in scandals, but that may be another story for another day. These packages are not multi, they're multi-multi. Boeing's fired CEO, CNN reports, could walk away with $60 million golden parachute. Now, that may depend on how the stock fluctuates. McDonald's CEO Stephen Easterbrook was forced out after his relationship with an employee was found to violate company policy. It was an affair. He's getting an exit package of nearly $42 million. Volkswagen was found to have lied repeatedly about emissions. What was supposed to be a cleaner car turned out to be quite dirty. His exit package could top $67 million. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the digital startups after this next break. But Adam Neumann, the founder, co-founder, and charismatic leader of WeWork, the basically, you know, temporary office space rental company, got a package that appears to be valued at roughly $1.6 billion. Folks, that's $1 billion. How is it possible that this is how people are spirited out of office after crisis?
I have read a number of CEO employment contracts, and this is the secret. It's just like two or three lawyers who write all these contracts. This is the secret. The definition of termination for cause means basically you have to be fired on a Tuesday for shooting people, you know. And
on Fifth Avenue, no doubt.
Yeah, on Fifth Avenue, exactly. So you can't fire people for cause. And if you can't fire them for cause, I mean, anybody else in any job, if we do a bad job, we get fired for cause and we don't get anything. But CEOs, despite the, you know, their professed love for the free market, believe me, they don't like to have a downside in their pay packages. And so they negotiate that going in. And that's what the problem is with the board of directors. Boards of directors who agree to that, you know, you want to go in like with a prenup and say, you perform, we'll give you everything that we got. You don't perform, you leave with what you brought with you.
Peggy Foran, we've only got about 40 seconds left, but you're on the Prue's board. You've been on other boards. You're appointed to the X Corporation, and they come to you with a pay package that involves this for a CEO. Do you vote in favor of that? Is that a good thing?
Well, I think you have to look at these as facts and circumstances. But I think, my understanding is there's a lot more overseeing, monitoring, and questioning large severance packages for many reasons.
And it also seems as though the fact that so much of the compensation comes in form of the stock value means that a lot of times these folks are going to be very much incentivized to make sure that the stock stays up quarter after quarter, week after week, rather than thinking about some of the long-term stuff that you guys have been talking about. I'd like you to stick up by. I'd like our listeners to stand by. We're going inside the arguments over how one might reform the way America's corporations are run. Join our conversation. As an investor, how closely do you weigh governance practices in deciding where to put your money? Should CEOs also be able to serve as a company chair? What other issues on this spark your interest? I'm David Folkenflik, and this is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik. We're discussing the importance of holding corporate leaders accountable, concerns about what's called governance. You can join our conversations. What questions do you have for my guests? Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. We've got a high-powered pair of guests this hour. With me, Peggy Foran. She's Chief Governance Officer and Corporate Secretary at Prudential Financial. And Nell Minow, Vice Chair of Value Edge Advisors, a leading critic and observer of corporations. Value Edge is a firm focused on helping institutional investors influence companies in which they own shares. We are taking your calls this hour. As I've said, I'd like to go to one or two of them now. Let's start with David in Richmond. Thanks for listening. What are your thoughts for our guest this hour?
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yes, sir.
I guess I was interested. One of your panel mentioned millennials having a greater sense of activism. And I work in the tech sector, and obviously there's plenty of problems there. But I'm interested in their thoughts on how companies have to compete, when companies have to compete more for millennial workers who care, as far as not just as customers, but as employees. In my experience, I've seen that cause positive change within companies as far as going after sustainability, culture, transparency, things like that. And I'm interested, I guess, in tech. It's very competitive for employees, so there's a different aspect there. But if any of that could be transported into other sectors as well, in their opinion.
Thank you so much for that, David. What do you think, Peggy?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, as the mother of 20-something, early 30-somethings, I can see that's exactly – they're not going to go to a company or an organization that does not reflect their values. And if you really want to be competitive and be able to hire the best folks, you have to pay, and they are paying attention to these types of things. If we had a lot of time and this was the specific subject, we could talk a lot about it, the organization, but it really is the values.
Well, give us one little soupçon, a little example.
For example, I can give you a personal example from my son-in-law, who happens to be with a great company. And he was upset when there was, an issue with gun control, and that his company really didn't come out with a statement. And I try to explain to him, you know, large companies and, you know, this was a localized
varied interests. And
yeah, you know, but again, you know, he expected that his, you know, a company he was employed with, you know, would share those types of values. And so I think you're seeing that more and more.
And it was an issue that was somehow germane, and I'm not asking you to identify, but like with Dick's or with Walmart, or it was something where instances that seemed to be related to his firm were not being addressed by
Well, them. Similar but different. I'm not sure that they were totally related, but it was related to society.
Huh.
So I think
Well, I don't think you're going to have a better example than the Me Too movement, which has really been transformative. And it's had a tremendous ripple effect. And companies have responded, I think, to that in a truly market-based way, not because they thought it was the right thing to do, because believe me, it was the right thing to do 10 years ago and 20 years ago and 30 years ago, but because they understand that their employees, their customers, their investors expect it.
You know, talking about people who are designated as indispensable, Les Moonves over at CBS, you know, was seen as somebody, I mean, he had the magic touch. He really led CBS to great financial fortunes and was paid an astonishing amount of money and turned out to have sort of acted with impunity for years. Nell, you and I have talked over the years about various media outfits, including places like Viacom, CBS, including places like News Corp and Fox, what's now called Fox Corp, but which was had corporate boards for shareholders, and yet so many of the figures on the board had deep personal and political ties to the controlling Murdoch family. It seems to me that's another way in which corporations at once are public in quotes. That is, they have public shareholders, but the public doesn't have any and the shareholders don't have great ability to affect the destiny of those companies or the culture of them.
And yet, that is why we literally pay them the big bucks. When you ask CEOs why they are worth all of that money, they say, because I have these unique leadership visionary qualities that that are responsible. You know, the organization stands in the shadow of one man, you know, that idea. And yet somehow when an embarrassing revelation comes up, they're out the door.
But Nell and other investors really are focusing companies and boards on the whole culture issue. And I think that's another thing that you've seen in the last 5 years, because, you know, who is overseeing the culture? What type of culture? Because these types of incidents can only happen if you've got that cultural environment. So there's just a lot more focus on that. How do you stop it, you really, before it begins?
I'd like to take a call now from Buffalo, New York. Paul, thanks for waiting and for weighing in.
Thank you. I'm trying to make this concise. My board experience is in the world of not-for-profits. And I think what is really needed in this country is an overhaul of the board system. To distill it and to deconstruct it, these are individuals we're talking about. And individuals that don't always act better in groups, they act less responsibly. There's people in not-for-profit world on boards that have no experience for this position. There's no testing. There's no qualification. Anybody can become a board member. And they're often on boards for reasons that are personally serving, for a resume builder, for status. And the board system, it's horrible, the not-for-profit system. I've been on one that was run out of existence because of quasi-illicit behavior. My husband was on the board of a major health delivery system here that had over 500 employees, millions of dollars, and that board was run by a CEO who handpicked his board.
So thanks for that, Paul. So just take a moment and explain to us what you know, a couple of steps that boards take to ensure that they do have strong figures and expertise in a way that can be maybe if not an adversarial check, a strong and genuine check on perhaps inappropriate directions or impulses that corporate leaders can take.
Sure, Dave. You know, and again, I think this has also evolved in the right direction certainly in the last 10 years. But again, we all have skills and experience matrix. So we go back, and this is really the governance committee's responsibility. We go back and we say, look, What are the critical issues for the company that the board really has to monitor and oversee, and do we have the right skills and experience on the board that can do that? And by actually looking at that and seeing what you need, when you go out to look at a director, you're not looking for someone's golfing buddy or a friend of the CEO. And I think probably 20, 30 years ago, that was the way it was done. But certainly, I don't think at least a good board, a good governance system does not allow that right now. So I think that's really the first thing. And then secondly, you're looking for that type of personality. Is this a person that really can ask those hard questions, but in a way that they can work with the full board? So I think it's changed. The process takes a lot longer, and it's a lot more focused, and it's looking for people that have the types of skills and experiences that are needed in order to monitor and oversee the company.
I want to take a call now from Pompano Beach, Florida. Dee, thanks for listening.
I'm calling about the SEC 10B18, the Safe Harbor Act, which is meant to incentivize CEOs to reinvest, and there's their accountability for capital reinvestment long term. This hasn't been acted on for 15 years. There's been a revolving door between the SEC regulators and corporate boards, which is what you've been talking about. And what your guests have to say about, you know, how do we give this, you know, teeth, and how do we get the SEC to step up and,
sure,
you know, enforce
sure
the regulations.
So thank you, Dee. Thanks for listening, and thanks for that thought. Let's take Nell Minow, take a moment, translate that in English for those who aren't as familiar with the SEC and what is designed by that and what's actually playing out.
Well, the overall question, which I support, is how do we make sure that executives are significantly invested in the company so that they care about what is happening over the long term? Should the SEC be responsible for that? No, that should be the board of directors. The board of directors should do it. And this is where I get very hardcore, and I think I may even lose Peggy on this. I don't think that executives or directors should be allowed to sell their stock for up to 5 to 10 years after leaving the company. And that's to make sure that they are as interested in the long term on the day they leave as they were throughout their careers.
What do you think, Peggy?
Well, you know, I think that's changed a lot too. You know, again, I can't specifically tell you what the time is, but I think many companies, including my own, have restrictions on sales for executive officers.
Commissioner Jackson at the SEC has documented that a huge number of CEOs sell their stock into a stock buyback. Now, a buyback is supposed to be telling the market that the stock is undervalued. Why would we allow CEOs to sell their stock into a buyback?
Is that a way that they capture more money than they otherwise might be able to?
Well, if they think the stock is going to go up, they would capture more money by holding on to it, wouldn't they?
Mm-hmm. I want to play a little bit, a couple of clips to give texture to the understanding that on the political field, you're seeing this reflected as well. First, let's recall that President Trump on the campaign trail and at times during his presidency has raised the specter of the idea that he would get involved when corporations were acting in a way that he thought was antithetical to American workers. That is what he promised. In 2018, General Motors announced plans to cease operations at plants in Ohio, Michigan, and Maryland, and to cut back production at two other plants, as well as cut its workforce by 15%. President Trump addressed reporters outside of the White House about his subsequent meeting with GM CEO Mary Barra.
I was very tough. I spoke with her when I heard they were closing. And I said, you know, this country's done a lot for General Motors. You better get back in there soon. That's Ohio. And you better get back in there soon. So we have a lot of pressure on them. You have senators. You have a lot of other people. A lot of pressure.
You know, now, President Trump has not been known as a great reformer. He's given a lot of, it seems, incentives to corporations to do certain things, keep certain plants open, struck deals, stripped away a lot of regulations. But that at least is the rhetoric that you're hearing at times, the idea that he wants to be tough on corporations. Meanwhile, during as we've looked at this Democratic race for the presidency, you've heard from a number of candidates. Elizabeth Warren, Massachusetts senator, she's running for the Democratic nomination, proposed what she calls the Accountable Capitalism Act back in 2018. Among its provisions would be a requirement that employees elect 40% of board members of corporations that have over $1 billion in annual revenue. She spoke with CNBC about it last month.
For more than a century, American corporations owed multiple duties. They owed duties to their investors, but also to their employees, to their customers, to the communities where they were located, to our country. And then in the late 70s, an economist comes along and says, hey, here's a novel idea. How about if you only owe any kind of duty to your investors, which means make it all about profitability. That means that American corporations today, these giant corporations, they have no loyalty to America or to American workers.
Now, to be clear, that act is a bill. It has not become law. I want to quickly go to a call from Omaha, Nebraska. Anne, thanks for calling in.
Hi. I'm a shareholder in about five publicly traded companies. And every year when I get the annual meeting materials, I always vote against the very high CEO pay. I have a lot of shares in some of these companies because I've been dividend reinvesting since the 1960s. But I want them to make better decisions based on the greater good. And my question is, what can I, as a single shareholder, do?
Well, let me pose that to the expert in the field, Nell Minow. Thanks so much for that, Anne. What can Anne do, Nell?
Anne, I love your question, and I vote against the pay plans and the stock that I hold as well. The best thing that you can do for most individual investors who are, as I said, are through 401ks and mutual funds is to ask your investment advisor for a copy of their proxy voting policies. Just like subatomic particles, brokers behave differently when they're observed. Let them know that you're paying attention. Ask if they vote in favor of these pay plans. And by all means, write to the company and say, I'm a shareholder. These are my concerns. What are you doing about it? Because we've seen over time that it's individual shareholders who've made the big difference. And by the way, there's a wonderful movie about that called The Solid Gold Cadillac, which I highly recommend.
And Anne, this is Peggy, and I have to tell you, you know, really, as a chief governance officer and a corporate secretary, those letters, you know, we ask people to comment on their ballot or letters, and those letters go to the board of directors. They actually get to see them and to hear what you have to say. So, you know, they are going. I know in my company, they go right to the board. So,
and what does the board do with that?
Well, you
talk about it at the meetings?
Yeah, they are discussed, and particularly at the Corporate Governance Committee. You have to realize diversity is very important. Not every shareholder believes the same thing as every other shareholder. So I think it's important, though, to be heard, and that's what the board is looking at. And particularly the comments, during the vote, not only on pay, but various other things, on diversity, on the various policies, on sustainability.
So corporate titans are subject to the Heisenberg principle. They like subatomic particles. They change by dint of how they are observed. Also, an interesting essay this week posted by the former head of international relations for Google, who argued that its interest in China and getting business in Saudi Arabia outstripped its corporate motto of "Don't be evil." He has resigned from that company and is apparently running for Senate in his native state of Maine. Peggy Foran, Chief Governance Officer and Corporate Secretary at Prudential Financial, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Dave.
I'd also like to thank Nell Minow. She's Vice Chair of Value Edge Advisors. Great to have your insight as well.
Thank you, David. Thank you, Peggy.
Thank you, Nell.
You guys can continue the conversation, as can our listeners. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. You can follow us on Twitter, find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. We're produced by Anna Bauman, Justine Downmine, Lena Amata, Stefano Katsonis, Wes Martin, James Ross, Dory Scheimer, Alex Schroeder, Grace Tatter, and Adam Waller. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm David Folkenflik. This is On Point.